David.
Okay, before you do that, I changed my mind. Scallops.
We'll take 5 minutes and then we'll be back for scallops.
To the sweeper motion, which is now motion to amend that all sector participants be restricted to a maximum possession limit of 400 pounds and to allow revision of the daily possession limit as a frameworkable item. Further comment on this? Dave.
Just the same correction last time. You want to take daily out of there. Just the possession limit.
Yep. Strike daily. Okay. Comment from the audience. Back to the council. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Ten. 11. Opposed? One in opposition. Motion carries 11-1. Back to the sweeper motion.
just for the record, while she's getting that together, we did wordsmith very little during the break, put it in bullet form, so hopefully it's a little bit easier to understand, but the intent is the same. It's just worded a little differently.
Okay, if we can get that up on the board so we can look it over. Dave,
I've lost track. The last thing refers to sectors, right?
That was the motion that was just passed.
Yeah,
she was adding
just,
that to
it. It just got added on. Shouldn't it say for sectors somewhere in there?
Anyone else on the sweeper motion? Pat Kirkle.
So I'm going to assume from this that the 5% cap on ownership of the general category allocation also applies to the limited access general category vessels, 5% of their 0.5%. And Deirdre clarified that there is, in fact, no stacking for those vessels anyway, so the 2% part of it becomes irrelevant. So I just want to make sure nobody disagrees with that interpretation.
Anyone on the council? Dr. Pierce.
Just to clarify that further, why does it become irrelevant?
There's no stacking allowed for general category vessels that qualify for, limited access vessels that qualify for general category permits.
Who else on the council? Go to the audience, Dave.
David Frula, Fisheries Survival Fund. I didn't understand the point that the regional administrator made. I don't think that this is meant in any way to change the 5% rule for the limited access, the pre-existing limited access fleet at all. Even by,
I'll try to add. No, you're right. It's not. Pat was just trying to clarify that we were having a discussion before the break that there was a confusion. Okay, well, there are going to be some limited access vessels that qualify for a limited access general category permit. What kind of ownership restrictions are they under? And it isn't explicitly clear in this motion, so I think Pat was trying to clarify that they, too, being that they're getting a limited access general category permit, would be restricted to individual ownership interests of up to 5% of the 0.5% allocated to that group.
I don't know how you could know that in quite the same way, because you're talking about to the extent you're talking about a historical an allocation based on historical landings, is it possible that, again, someone that might own 10, might have an interest in 10 permits, those vessels, because they were located in an area where they had done some historic Gen Cat fishing, might end up with pre-existing more than the 5% of that 0.5%? And what I would hope not happen is that somehow that would end up requiring, again, this is all theoretical, some divestiture. You back into saying you now have too much concentration of your Gen Cat, and it's going to cause you problems with your ownership. Am I making myself clear? Pat?
Well, I think to address that problem, there is a grandfather clause, but the more I think about it and with the questions you've raised, I wonder if this is necessary, if whether it's necessary to have any cap on the limited access vessels, because they already do have the other 5% cap. So it may be redundant and actually may conflict. So perhaps what we need to clarify is that it doesn't apply to the limited access vessels.
That the pre-existing ownership concentration rules should cover it.
Right, right.
Because they're not allowed to stack that general category effort, it shouldn't matter.
Right.
Okay. Thank
you. Do we need a motion to that effect, or just can we just go with a clarification that it only applies to general category vessels, not limited access vessels qualifying for general category?
We can go with a clarification if everybody agrees. Nobody on the council? Okay. Any other comments from the audience? Seeing none, I will come back to the council. Any further comments? Seeing none, Pat?
Never mind. I'm sorry. I think mine's on the main motion, not the sweeper motion, whatever that means.
We hope. Terry, are you?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a clarification question for Pat. The vote we took this morning on the Northern Gulf of Maine Management Area will disallow any federal permitted vessel to fish in state waters after the federal tack is reached?
Correct.
Well, I've got to fix that. And I'll be back with a motion to amend in a minute.
On the sweeper motion, any further comments? Seeing none, I will call the question. All those in favor of the motion, so indicate. Contrary minded? One. Abstention? So it passes 12-1. And that moves us back to the main motion as amended. Pat.
I wanted to raise the VMS issue again. We sent a letter indicating that we felt this could be monitored through the existing monitoring requirements, the dealer and vessel reporting requirements. The committee was trying to be more precautionary and instead suggested that landings be reported through the VMS system. Again, we don't think that's necessary, and as you heard from enforcement yesterday, it might be a good idea at this point to not add additional requirements to the VMS that aren't absolutely necessary until we have the chance to operate under the existing system for a while and continue to work out issues and bugs with the system. So I would suggest that this isn't absolutely necessary, and we ought to think about just relying on the existing vessel requirements, monitoring requirements.
Would that mean, in your opinion, that we would drop section 3.1.5 in... And here is point two, but in the document it's point one. What's the council's pleasure on that? Would you make...
I I move that we delete, as a preferred alternative, section 3.1.5.1.
Point one was no action. I'm pretty sure point two was use of VMS.
Okay.
So you'd be replacing VMS with the no action.
Right.
So I'm confused. We're eliminating point two.
I think Pat's suggestion is to, of the main motion, take section 3.1.5.2 and replace it with 3.1.5.1, which would be the no action.
Is there a second to that motion? Dave Gaethel. Comments from the council. Dave.
Yeah, I understand that it's getting to be difficult to follow all these VMS units that we've required so many people to carry, but I think this is one instance where we really need it. These boats are going to have individual allocations, bringing in odd amounts of scallops up to 400 pounds, but you know, it's not an allocation of trips, it's an allocation of pounds. And I think we're headed for a disaster if we don't make them declare through VMS what they've got on board before they come on board to see if anyone's watching. I think we have to have this as a backup to make this an effective management program.
Further council comments? Dave.
Yeah. I'm sympathetic to Dave's comments, but we've got the VMS. I mean, we know where they are. We know when they're going home. If you want to see what they got, get on there and see. The system is creaking along. It's on the verge of, in my opinion, near collapse. And every time we ask it to do something else, it's, you know, we're that much closer to a meltdown. And I think anything we can do to alleviate having to send more stuff at the moment is a good idea. I mean, I think, you know, if we wanted to reinstate this, maybe we could add a clause that said this could be a frameworkable item. If we find that it's too, that this is too liberal, that we're having problems, we could add it to reinstate VMS reporting as a frameworkable item. I don't know if it's in the list now or not, but I just think anything we can do to alleviate strain on the system at the moment is a good idea.
Phil?
Thank you, Rip. I agree with both parts on this one. I understand Dave's concern and Pat's concern about overloading or having to wait until we get the system up a little better, but I'm a little concerned that if you don't put it in here, then you'd have to take a different action at a different time to require it. I almost wonder if it wouldn't be better to just require it or do it, but do it a little ways out of this. Maybe down the road a little piece VMS comes in, or have it worded in there so it'll come in the future, but it won't come in right away until we get caught up a little bit.
Paul?
What I'm concerned about is this is a hard tack, and we have to have ways to monitor hard tacks and close the fishery before we go over by so much. So, and if we're going to rely on VTRs, I don't think that's good enough for a hard tack. But if we're going to rely on, what are we going to rely on, dealer reporting? Or is the no-action VTRs? Or
it's not a hard tack.
It's not a hard tack? Well, we still have to stay within the...
Yeah, it's an allocation. It's an annual allocation to the vessels, which is one reason why we said that it was something that didn't need to be real time, which is the difference between the VMS and the current monitoring systems that we have now. It's more timely. We're not monitoring up to the 5% because we've given the allocation ahead of time based on achieving the 5%. So it's what we're monitoring is that each individual vessel is staying within its individual allocation.
Rodney.
Yeah, this is a question to Pat, and you can track that through the VTRs.
Effectively, what's being suggested is the VMS should replace the VTR. So it's, you know, in terms of being able to track it, it's just as effective as the VMS is. The only difference is the timing issue. And it's we don't use just the VTR, but it's that in combination with the dealer reports.
April.
Thank you. Pat, would the SAFIS system help with that? Real-time reporting?
The SAFIS is of course more timely. That's really the dealer reports for us, not just SAFIS, but the electronic reporting for dealers. But we would ultimately need to match that with the vessel trip reports, and so that would be what would be less timely.
Any other, Paul?
If I'm not mistaken, the Gulf of Maine is a hard tack, 200 pounds per trip. So VTRs would not be acceptable to stay within that hard tack. And you know, again, I'm trying to move us to if we're going towards limited access programs, we have to be able to monitor them. And the interim period will be on this program all of 2008. Where we'll have vessels that are in transition. And to rely on a lot of vessels in transition, we are going to have a hard tack, I think. So I'm concerned about using the VTRs.
Phil.
Yeah, I tend to agree with Paul more so on this. I mean, I do understand all the problems we're having with VMS, but I think this really ends up needs some serious tracking in different areas at different times. My main problem is we voted a couple of years ago to put VMS on these boats, mandated they have them, and once again it becomes a one-way street. We'll watch you, but we won't be able to use your information or become the other side of the tool. So I'm going to have to oppose that.
Any other council comments? Seeing none, I'm going to go, Deidre.
Sorry, Rip, can I just clarify a few things in response to some things Paul mentioned? Yes, the Gulf of Maine would be under a hard tack under what we approved this morning, but that motion did include the requirement to report through with VMS for vessels that would qualify for that permit. And also the other thing I wanted to point out is that vessels that do qualify for a limited access general category permit in this plan would still be required to have VMS. They just don't have to declare their landings through VMS. So I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that that wouldn't change.
Go to the audience. I have Maggie first and then Dave.
Thank you. I want to urge the council to support the committee's recommendation on this issue. I guess I have a question for Pat because I understand that, I mean, what happens if everybody gets a percentage of the, each permit gets a percentage of the 5%. They get their own individual percentage. But what happens if through cheating or misreporting or something that the fishery goes over the 5%? Isn't that percentage that everybody gets the next year going to be lowered somehow?
Indirectly, yes. I mean, if for some reason the fishing mortality rates were higher than expected, then that ultimately is reflected in subsequent quotas or total allowable landing limits, or whatever we call them. I get confused between all the fisheries. So overages, you know, will show up indirectly at some point, but there's no direct accounting for them.
Okay, I just want to point out again that in imposing this limited access system on this fleet, which Associated Fisheries of Maine supports, one of the consequences is that the people who are really dependent on this fishery are going to take a huge cut in order for more people to come in. So those people now want to be sure that their allocation that they're going to get, this percentage, which you've all decided already is based, it's fair to give them an individual allocation, which, again, Associated Fisheries of Maine also agrees with, they want that to be tracked accurately. They want to make sure that it doesn't go over and then they lose something the next year as a result of someone else cheating. They're not going to cheat. They're not concerned about telling you what they're going to land before they land. They want to do that. So you can rely on the dealer reporting. You're still going to have that. The VMS reporting is just going to be a way to make sure that there is that extra check. So if they hail 300 pounds and they bring in 400, then that's a violation. And that will stop them from having that. That will make them think twice about bringing in something over their allocation. It will help them. So I urge you to support that. I think I understand that there's problems with the VMS system that's getting overloaded, but the VMS system I always hoped would become something that would be useful to the fleet. And this is one way that it would be actually useful to the fleet. And in the interim period where everybody's qualifying, hopefully we can get this VMS system in a better shape, because it's going to be at least a year before everybody gets their permit and allocation. So hopefully things will get a lot more straightened out by then. So, again, I urge you to support the committee's recommendation and require reporting of landings through the VMS. Thank you.
Dave.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. We also support the committee motion. One thing you get from the VMS hail is enforcement gets to know when a vessel's coming in a more concrete way than sort of following a bunch of essentially dots on a screen. And that's valuable, especially when you have an individual allocation system that is not going to have any sort of uniformity to it in terms of what people bring in and where and when. When it was trips, it's easy. You know, you just get a certain number of them, but if it's different poundage, the possibilities there, and again, I don't want to, same thing that Maggie Raymond said, the possibilities are to underreport. That has consequences for everybody. This is a system that's here. It's in use. It doesn't seem that burdensome to send a hail in terms of what's coming in, just so there can be a record that's individual to that vessel and not tied up in, you know, a sort of a dealer report that's going to have a bunch of information in it from different vessels.
Ron, then Bruce.
Ron Smolowitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. I fully agree with the need for VMS reporting, because it could allow the Coast Guard to enforce before the vessels get within the harbors where they could pass off a bag of scallops. I'm wondering if there's an interim measure as far as when the VTR has to be filled out. If it was required that the VTR had to be filled out before passing the demarcation line, then the vessel could be stopped and boarded and the VTR checked against. I mean, that's not as good as the VMS reporting, because they could have two copies of a VTR or something, unless there's some way to keep better track. But I'm just trying to think of a better system as an interim measure until we could get the electronic reporting properly funded and implemented.
Bruce, on the motion.
For once, I agree with everybody. I believe the VMS, as much as I was against it, and the reason I decided to change my vote for it, because I think it used properly, it does create an honest system. But it's got to be monitored. And I don't know what kind of problems they have, and I know I haven't had any problems with it at this point. But it's true about the VTRs, because that's not even required until 9 o'clock the next morning, I believe. So that's a discrepancy. And it's correct. If you land with the VMS and it says 1 pound, you know, one thing, and you have another, they got you. But you can do anything with paper.
Anyone else in the audience? Okay, back to the council. I wasn't here to hear Pat's explanation, but I apologize for that. I'm just wondering if the cost recovery provision could account for some of the resources necessary to deal with this situation.
I'm not entirely sure off the top of my head, but it's not just a resource issue. I mean, it's certainly, you know, we're struggling with the resource requirement, but it's also just continuing to work through the issues that we've already had with all the things that we've implemented. So, resources would certainly help with that, but they're not going to solve that problem.
Anyone else on the council? Phil?
Thank you, John. Just a quick question, I guess, is what are we looking at for finalizing? We're going to be probably a year out or something before this actually takes place anyhow, right? And that's question one. Question two is, I'm a little confused there. This is just going to be a VMS declaration of reporting. It's not replacing the VTR, or is it?
It would be both. You'd still be required to do VTR.
That's right.
Would this motion impact the Gulf of Maine requirement that was in a previous motion, which is now part of the Maine Amendment, right? There's a requirement to report via VMS to track the quota in the Gulf of Maine exemption area. Deirdre.
John, I think it's when you were out of the room. We did talk about this a little bit, and my read of it is that no, it would not. This is a separate limited entry provision for the limited entry program, and I would imagine that the hard tack in the Gulf of Maine motion that came as a package would remain as a requirement for that. Paul also mentioned, though, when during the interim period, if there's any kind of hard tack for this fishery during the transition period, arguably there would be more of a need for VMS than under a quota program. But that's the discussion that when you were out of the room.
That's what happens when you leave the room. Okay. Anything else from the council? Okay. I'll call a question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. 2. Oppose? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 15. Motion fails. 2 in favor, 15 against. I'm told we're back on the main motion. Anything further? Dave?
Yeah, I have a motion concerning the interim measures, which I think Juanita has. So we need to set some interim measures until the individual allocation system can be put in place. So this motion would be to establish a hard tax for the general category of 10% during this interim period, 10% of the overall tax, administered on a quarterly basis, with quarterly allocations being proportional to landings during the qualifying years of 2000 to 2004.
Is there a second? Seconded by April. Discussion? Comprehension and then discussion? Dave Gable? Okay. Jim Adler?
And just to be clear to myself, how long will this interim period be predicted to last? Does anybody have an estimate?
Pat?
I think we're still looking at a year to 2 years.
Phil?
How does this go in? I'm confused. This is going to be part of the amendment. So when the amendment takes effect, it'll just take place between the time the amendment takes effect and the limited access program takes effect.
Yeah.
It doesn't affect from now till the amendment does go in.
I believe what happens is that the package gets forwarded and implemented, but the ITQ portion of the amendment doesn't get implemented until after the, what do you call it? Losing words now.
The appeal process
is completed, but in the interim, this motion would address the interim period. Dr. Pierce, and then Dave Gaethel.
Just a clarification. Why did the committee go with 10% and not 5%? Especially since we're going to have likely 2 years between now and then. It's a long period of time during which the fisher will operate at 10%.
Both the council and the committee talked quite a bit about this. And given that the recent history is 11 and 12%, and there was a great deal of concern about enhancing Derby fisheries and so forth, if we were to reduce it immediately to 5%, the feeling was that we should go to 10%. We had two options in the document. Correct me if I'm wrong. It was 10% or TAC or no TAC, which I don't think is feasible under the new Magnuson rules. So those were our choices in the document, and this reflects the need for some kind of limit, so 10%.
In the document, you mean in the public hearing document?
Yeah, in the Amendment 11.
In the Amendment 11 document, that which went to public hearing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Dave Gaethel.
It's almost like I don't know what to say. I mean, if you want to guarantee that 4,000 people are going to appeal their permit and drag this out as long as possible, this is setting us up to do that. I mean, I guess maybe I'd look to Gene for a little guidance here, why we can't go the other way and do this to say, you've got 90 days to file for your permit and you can't fish until your appeal is heard. That'll speed up the appeals process or drop out all the people that are filing a fallacious appeal. But if we do this and you can catch twice as much as you're going to be able to catch once the appeal process is done and anybody can appeal, you'd be a fool not to. I mean, you get to fish for at least two more years for twice what you're going to get to catch. I'm a little baffled, I got to say.
Jim.
Just a question, and maybe the committee has looked at this, is that what if somebody finds out what their allocation is and chooses not to appeal? And why can't they fish under their percentage as soon as they want to, because I'm concerned with this, that we're creating an Olympic fishery for two years. So if somebody gets their allocation, figures they don't have grounds for an appeal, and they just accept it, and they go on and fish under the new rules with their percentage of the tack. The only thing I could see that could happen is that their percentage may change at the end of the appeal process a little bit. But it would be up to the individual to decide that you could tell them that your percentage is for the next couple of years. It may be adjusted slightly for the existing appeals. And you can go forward and fish under the rules that we're establishing to avoid as much as possible this four Olympic fisheries a year. I think I'm just asking if the committee thought of that, and would that work, if anybody.
Did the committee look at that?
Yeah, I think the discussion was we don't know what the denominator is. If you don't know how many, you know what one person's share is, what one person's landings are, but you don't know what to divide that by to figure out what their percentage is, you know, because they're under appeal. We don't know what everyone's landings are, so we don't know how to calculate any individual's percentage. I see some puzzled looks. It's simply, you know, everyone's best year weighted by their years in the fishery, all of that stuff. What does all that add up to needs to be divided, needs to be put in the denominator of the fraction to figure out what Joe's allocation is.
April?
Thank you. The way I read these two alternatives is there's either the 10% in this transition period or there's no action, that the general category fishes as it is right now, which is over 10% in more recent years. So it's either 10% or it's wide open. That's the way I read it.
Anyone else on the council? Go to the audience. David?
I think David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. We agree that there needs to be a cap, especially when you have people going through an appeals process that may not have really recognized they don't have a long-term interest in the fishery and have, desire to get what they can before they're kicked out. There's the folks that are going to qualify, as Mr. Odlin suggests, have more of a conservation interest to get what, you know, they're going to be close to what they're entitled to over the long term. We do have a significant concern, though, about continuing to direct that much fishing effort at the inshore scallop beds. That's where the problem is right now. And a 10% tack, especially if it's Olympic, when it's go out, turn around, come back, turn around, you're going to exacerbate that. I mean, everybody had hopes for Hudson Canyon coming back. Right now, Hudson Canyon's getting pounded. It seems that 10% is too high. I believe that the committee, what came before the council before was up to 10%. It would seem that if you have five and maybe you add in a couple of percent for your appeals, especially because a lot of these appeals, if they're based on control date things, they ought to be able to be sorted out pretty quickly, that something less than 10%, but maybe a little more than five, could serve your interest just as well as going all the way to 10.
Yes, sir.
Karina, I just wanted to point out, traditionally, I guess it was 2% until the last 5 years, and it jumped up to 11%. But that's misleading because that also includes the general category landings of the limited access boats after they used up their days at sea. So it's more like 8%, I think. Correct me if I'm wrong, anybody, but I believe that's, I just wanted to make that point. Thank you.
Ron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ron Smolowitz, Fishery Survival Fund. I don't quite understand what options are available to the council because, well, first of all, I don't understand the two-year period. But is an option available where you can do the allocations based on the criteria and allocate the 5%? And then the vessels that appeal, if they win their appeal, have a pool of scallops available where they could go out whenever the appeal is finished and collect the scallops that they would have gotten during that period. And in other words, let them go through the appeal process first. They're not losing anything. They'll be able, if they win the appeal, they'll be able to collect the scallops that they should have had. Correctly had. Is there something that prevents that from happening?
Does anyone feel comfortable answering that? I'm not familiar with the precedent in other fisheries.
D. Not a lawyer yet, but while Gene thinks about that stuff, I wanted to really just point out a document that I mentioned this morning that people may have forgotten because it's document number 10. This was handed out this morning, and as I mentioned this morning, it was a long time ago, but the council was not very comfortable with the level of alternatives we developed in April either, and it seems as though people are not completely wild about them still, and the committee wasn't either. They talked a long time about strategies like Ron was just discussing and some other ideas, but there are some constraints in what we can do. The first constraint is that you have to stay within the bounds of what we have in the document and can't come up with something completely different at this stage. The other constraint that I'm going to defer to Gene would be due process law in terms of how you treat vessels under an appeal compared to other vessels and so forth, if you can treat them differently. There is some precedence, as I understand, in the multi-species plan under Amendment 5. Vessels under appeals were given the option under some sort of fleet day at sea category. They would have the choice to fish under a lower level while they were in appeals. And again, this is I don't know a lot about this, but document number 10 tries to describe the conversations we've had about this issue so far, some of the constraints we may be under in terms of legally what types of time periods we can reduce in terms of appeals and so forth. And on the back page are a few staff brainstorming ideas about other alternatives that could be considered for this. The one that Dave has on the board as the first motion is related or similar to number one on this list, which is to consider spreading out any kind of fleet-wide tack by quarter. There are other alternatives below that that try to get at more what Ron is suggesting, where you have some sort of system that would allocate individual allocations to vessels based on what we think is going to happen and then leave some sort of additional allocation or available tack for vessels under appeals. But again, aside from these ideas, we've tried to put some on paper. Only the two of them went out for public comment, and we do have a wide range of alternatives in the document that you can pick and choose from, but just trying to answer your question about what's available to us in terms of the legal constraints with due process law and stuff, I would definitely turn to Gene for that one.
You're going to have to repeat Ron's going to have to repeat his example. I didn't follow it.
Could you, Ron?
Okay. I'm basically saying that when the amendment goes into effect, you allocate, based on the NIMS data, the allocations to all the vessels. And then vessels that do not get an allocation, they could appeal. And when they win their appeal, they're given their correct allocation out of a pool of scallops that was held in reserve. So they don't lose anything. And I don't see any net loss. There's nothing I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but it doesn't seem to me there's any due process issue or whatever. You're hearing their appeal, and they, when they win their appeal, they don't lose a darn thing. They get their scallops.
Well, you, so you don't let them fish for 7-8 months? I mean, how do you determine how much the reserve is? I don't see how that works.
Well, first of all, the reserve could come out of the following year, when, and most of these vessels, if they have other permits, they're out there fishing anyway. They could be qualified. In other words, I don't see a large universe of vessels. You have the vessels that are in the northern Gulf of Maine are already taken care of. The guys that are incidental catch, they're not talking large, vast amounts of scallops. They're going to be relatively small amounts. The only vessels that the control date issue should be answered probably before the amendment goes into effect. I mean, I can't see very complicated appeals questions other than the what their best year might have been and adjustments to the percentage, their percentage, which is going to be a relatively small amount of scallops in the overall scheme of things. I think it would be a lot better, instead of initiating a derby for the general category fleet, which this will do, and probably create overfishing situation, it would be a lot better to hold back a pool of scallops in a conservative manner we've been managing this fishery, and then allocate them when the vessel wins their appeal.
Well, I mean, that's a totally new concept. It doesn't meet one of the criteria that Deirdre just mentioned. It does mean that vessels that are appealing don't get to fish until their appeal is resolved, which I think is a fairness and equity question. I mean, if the council wants to discuss this option and try to figure out what the reserve is, how long they can go without fishing, et cetera, they can. I do think it hasn't really been brought to the attention of the public, though. I don't think it resolves any better than any of the other examples of some of the competing interests here and the need to try to treat vessels fairly. Now, you have to remember that if a vessel doesn't win on appeal, it can't fish anymore. It's not like they can keep appealing and continue to fish for 1 or 2 years. So, you know, there's a likelihood that a lot of the vessels that have bogus appeals can be, you know, resolved in the first few months and are not going to be part of the fishery for very long.
I fully understand that, and that's why I see the main problem is the derby and the consequence of 10%. You know, 10% is going to create significant overfishing and wiping out a lot of available scallops for the onshore fleet. 5% is going to create a derby that's going to shut down the fishery. I mean, those options are just not good. To me, the better option, I mean, I don't even know the legal requirement for having to have this type of interim period in the built actually into the plan. It would seem to me it's an administrative component of, you know, a regulatory component, but it would be a lot better to put aside 5% of the TAC in Framework 19 or whatever, and then allocate it based on, you know, the opening date, the information. And like you say, a lot of those appeals are going to start. First of all, you're not going to have a large universe of appeals because they have nothing to gain if they, you know, in this, you know, what we have on the table, everybody's going to appeal. But in this approach that I'm recommending, only legitimate appeals will probably be up there because they don't have anything to gain. And they don't lose anything because the appeals will be resolved relatively quickly. And they're going to be able to fish. They're going to have plenty of time to fish and catch their scallops. So it's not a very significant economic impact on an individual vessel. I just think overall it's the best approach.
Pat, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I actually think the best approach is the number two on Deirdre's memo from this morning, and wondered if Dave had considered that one, and if so, what his concerns might be. And just to quickly outline it for the council's benefit, it's the tiered approach. You know, recognizing that none of these are good options, the tiered approach at the very least does address the Derby fishery portion of it. It would require some guesstimation of the number of boats that will appeal, and we probably need to be guess high on that. But what it, using the tiered approach, and this is the one in the document 3.1.2.4.3, which is on page 19, people would just get an allocation within the tier based on their landings in the records that we have. And so it would be somewhat conservative in that regard. But again, it's probably better than a Derby type fishery. So I didn't know if you'd thought about this one at all.
Yeah, I think if it passes the equity, you know, fairness and equity and the standard, and those numbers can be worked out, I mean, all this seems it would require a fair amount of work on the services part. If that can be done, then it has you know, some attractive features to it. I don't know whether that would slow up you know, the ultimate implementation of Amendment 11 or not. I guess it would be part of the work you'd have to do anyway.
Okay, I'm still in the audience. Bruce?
I'd like to read just something that I think we should consider as we move forward with this. It's consistency with the applicable laws, Magnuson-Stephen Fisheries Conservation and Management Act, which I actually never read before, and I should have. This is National Standards section of the Magnuson-Stephen Fishery Conservation and Management Act requires that the fishery management plans contain conservation and management measures that are consistent with the 10 national standards. And I'll skip most of it. But in number 4, it says conservation and management measures shall not discriminate between residents of different states. If it has become necessary to allocate or assign fishing privileges among various United States fishermen, such allocation shall be A, fair and equitable to all fishermen, which this is not being, reasonably calculated to promote conservation and carried out in such a manner that no particular individual, corporation, or other entity acquires an excessive share of such privileges, which many boat owners are, 15 to 17 boats. And then number 8, conservation and management measures shall consistent with conservation requirements of this Act, including the prevention of overfishing and rebuilding of overfished stocks, take into account the importance of fishery resources to fishing communities by utilizing economic and social data that meet the requirements of paragraph 2 in order to provide for sustained participation of such communities and, to the extent practicable, minimize adverse economic impact on such communities, which we are not taking into consideration here. That is not what's being done. We're obliterating the general category. And we are not playing fair. It is not divided evenly as we make these measures, just like what's going down here. These people, including myself, are fighting for their life, and there's a few people here who want to bring the guillotine down as fast as possible and get it done. That's not what the Management Act is all about.
Dave Brilla.
David Brilla for the Fisheries Survival Fund. I might get howled out of the room on this one. The number 2, The next framework is scheduled to come in 2008, right, for the fishing year 2008. I mean, it would seem to me that if you wanted to go for a tiered approach, but you needed to refine it a little bit, that could be implemented then. Deirdre may, like I said, may howl me out of the room, but that would give you a little more time to refine that in a way that it might be constructive.
If I could just respond, I think the way that some of these were envisioned is that Amendment 11 would include the concept of what the interim measure would be and then the actual regulation that would implement if it went tier-based, for example, or quarterly tax. Framework 19 would have to specify what those allocations would be in fishing years 08 and 09 or portions of those until Amendment 11 is implemented.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman, but maybe I'm misunderstanding this, but by the qualification periods we picked this morning, 2000 to 2004, and a 1,000-pound landing criteria, I get we only qualify 426 boats. Those would be the only boats that would be appealing. Anybody after that control date would not have an appeal. Well, I think we said anybody after that control date couldn't appeal because they came in after, right? Right, and out of that 426 boats, they would be appealing their allocation. So I don't think they would catch up the tack as fast as everybody's thinking. That's what I'm coming from. You've reduced it from 900 and some odd boats that are actively fishing.
If that's the case, we don't have a problem. But I think that is not the case. I think that of the 900 boats fishing now or whatever, they catch 10% of the tack. Now we're going down to 400 catching 5%. As soon as the appeal process allows those other 500 boats that came in after 2004, from what we talked about last time, we can't say you can't appeal. If we can say, this is an option, if we can say you can't appeal if you're appealing the control date, then that might eliminate about 500 votes from appealing.
Jim Salisbury.
Yeah, at the committee, this aspect was discussed fairly fully, and the advice we got from the region's representatives were that appeals, you couldn't prevent anybody from appealing, but appeals for not having a permit, they would be saying, I had a permit before the control date. Those appeals could be, they have to let them do it, but they could be determined relatively quickly, and, I mean, they'd have to say, here's my permit, see, you issued it, and somebody lost it down there. But, I mean, the consequence of that could be dealt with very quickly. So, in effect, we took it as it's not that they don't have the right to appeal, it's not going to amount to much. The real appeals and the ones that take time are the ones for what they think they're allocated. And so, in that case, I think Rodney's is right. If virtually the only ones that you really have to deal with are the ones that say, I have a different amount. And account for that. And that may be everybody, but they still have to have some basis to do that.
Okay, so we have a motion on the board that's 10% and quarterly allocations, and I'm not sure how the council is feeling about that. April?
I guess I go back to the question, what other options do we have? I know, you know, there's some concern about the 10% being too high, but nothing was in the document that went to public hearing, so we can't come up with 7 or 8%. Am I correct? So we've stuck with these two options, and I guess I don't understand how the tiered approach that Pat's talking about would play in with this. I guess I'm kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place here, that these are the two interim measures. Either we operate status quo and probably exceed 10% until everything goes in, or you put a cap in at 10. I'm deferring to you. I don't know if, you know, I can't suggest 7% or anything lower. Just pick that one out.
Deirdre, you referenced two criteria in the memo. One of them was what went out to the public, and the other was precedent. Was that?
Yeah, it was kind of legal constraints, but in response to April, I mean, I would argue in the spirit of being creative, yes, this section only had two alternatives specifically to it, but the entire Amendment 11 document itself did have a hard tack option in it, for example. It did have a quarterly hard tack alternative in it. These have all been fully analyzed. We did already analyze the impacts of a 2.5 to 11% tack to this fishery, so those impacts have been fully analyzed. So someone from NEPA or someone could correct me, but I would argue that those types and the three-tiered alternative, yes, it would be a temporary basis versus permanently, but they have, those types of impacts have been discussed in the document, and that's why I put them on that list, because in a way they are in the document at some point and went out for public comment, and not necessarily just for interim measures, but they certainly have been fully analyzed in the document that went out for public hearing.
So if I can follow up, I believe at the committee level there was a motion to go to a different percentage, and what you're telling me is we could make a motion to go to a different percentage in the interim as an alternative to these two because it's in the document?
The committee's motion is the 5% for the long term.
Right, but in the interim.
That would be my perspective. If you want to get legal advice from a NEPA perspective, I would argue that the document considers a hard tack from 2.5 to 11.
That's my feeling as well, April. I'm not seeing any motion to amend this, so I'm going to call the question. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed. 1, 2. 2 opposed. Motion carries 11-2. How many abstentions? 1 abstention. Dave, anything else?
Do we have anything else on Amendment 11?
That's related to that, because it just came up right before this, related to VMS. I'm not exactly sure how all of the other provisions in Amendment 11 will apply yet to this interim period, but because it is a hard tack by quarter, should I assume, I'm sorry, what happened with the VMS motion? Did we pass it? Thumbs up, so this will apply. Thank you.
if there's nothing else under amendment, no other.
You have no other business for Amendment 11?
No other business for Amendment 11. So that puts us to a vote on the main motion.
We have one big motion at this point. I'm going to check back with the council, and I'm going to go back to the audience one more time before we vote this through. Terry?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I have one more motion for consideration. And I move that we allow general category vessels that qualify for the North Gulf of Maine management area to fish in state waters exclusively under state regulations after the Northern Gulf of Maine tack is reached. And after clarification of the implications of my friendly acceptance of adding a control date in order to control capacity, and consideration that we also moved that the Northern Gulf of Maine tack is set by federal landings only, but that state landings by federal permits are included in the federal landings, I believe this motion helps balance our effort to control mortality and capacity while also allowing for opportunities for small boats in a diverse fishery.
Is there a second? Seconded by Dana Rice. Discussion? Dave?
D-
So this motion, if passed, would allow a federal permit holder to retreat to state waters after the tack has been reached and continue to fish on the same resource in state waters, and the their landings would no longer count, or it would be just understood that we're going to exceed our tack for that area?
We haven't. We're going to have an extremely small tack for this area. Well, I mean, the historic landings are with the conservation tax are going to allow for almost nothing. And the state landings are being added to the federal landings to offset that. There's a disparity. What this will allow will be an opportunity for boats that have traditionally fished there, do fish there right now, to be able to do what they've traditionally done, is in winter months go back and fish in federal waters. It will also allow for opportunities for supplemental income from the draggers and the other fish that have, other vessels that have traditionally fished there, and help balance out the disparity. I believe that exists between the way we propose to move forward with setting the tack.
Dave, and then I have Gene.
Yeah, just it seems to me to be a nod to understanding right out front that we're going to exceed the tack. It just is a non-starter to me. We're going to stop count. We're going to count their landings against the tack until we reach the tack, and then they're going to go in state waters, and we won't count their tack anymore. Their catch anymore.
We're counting sense. Their landings in state waters against the tack,
but it says after the northern Gulf of Maine tack is reached.
But so the tack is being set by federal landings only, and when the tack is accrued, it's using state waters landings in order to reach that amount.
Gene, then Deirdre.
What state waters fall within the northern boundary?
Mass, New Hampshire, and Maine.
Okay. And do we know if they all have what their restrictions are in each of those states in terms of allowing scallop landings?
Maine has a seasonal fishery with a dredge limit and some specific poundage and other trip limits.
But after this has been in place for a couple of years, are we still only counting federal landings to determine that tack once we have required?
Are we determining a tack for the whole Gulf of Maine resource, or are you going to determine a tack for what's in the federal waters?
Deirdre.
Just trying to raise my hand. The way the motion read this morning, we clarified it to be clear. We're not going to base this federal Gulf of Maine tack on federal landings. There's no way we can do that. What we're going to do is do our best as a PDT to estimate what the federal resource is in federal waters, recognizing that most of it is in state waters. So we're not going to be basing it on landings or anything to that effect, so people are clear. It's the resource that we're expecting is in federal waters. I had a few questions about this motion. So is this going to be just an allowance for the general category vessels that qualify for the northern Gulf of Maine only, so that a vessel that qualifies for the regular limited access general category permit would not be permitted to fish in state waters after the tax cut? It's only for the vessels that qualify for the Gulf of Maine permit?
Correct.
I'm going to suggest that may set up complications, at least for Massachusetts, whereas somebody could qualify for a federal permit, limited access general category permit, and then...
I'm open to a friendly.
Anyone else? Jimmy?
Yeah, just to Dave's comments, we don't know that these are the same resources. I quite frankly don't believe they are. I think they're different. At least in Maine, the inshore scallop is a different scallop than the offshore scallop.
That's my opinion. We don't have any science to debate that. We're measuring the TAC based on federal landings, so I support the motion.
Based on, Deirdre, can you restate how we're going to base the TAC again?
How I understood it, the discussion this morning, since we can't accurately take VTR data and distinguish where it came from in terms of state versus federal landings, what the PDT will do is give a best estimate of what the scallop resource available to the Northern Gulf of Maine fishery would be. We're not going to, well, we are going to probably have to look at historical landings, of course, because there's not a lot of information, but we'll be looking for the resource in that area, not necessarily in the federal area.
Terry.
My part of my angst is the inclusion, which I heard this morning, of the state landings in the federal permits in order to set it up. I mean, it's two different. We've got a completely distinct area, and we're starting to put apples and apples in the same box.
Dave.
Yeah, the only other comment I would add is it seems like this. I would like to think we'd create incentives for a better assessment in this area, which would include state waters, and this seems to run counter to that. That would produce a disincentive to learn more about the total resource there and how best to manage it. So it's just another reason I'm going to oppose the motion.
The incentive, at least for the state of Maine, is to expand our survey. We have a pretty darn good state survey. It's shown that we have had a steady, if not slowly, increasing biomass over the last number of years. Our intention is to help out the rest of the Northern Gulf by expanding our survey into federal waters.
Anyone else on the council? Gene?
Yeah, I'm a little troubled by this idea that we're not considering the state part of this northern. I mean, are we deciding that that's not part of the range of this part of the resource? You know, we're required in the Madison Act to manage a stock throughout its range. Are we saying, I'm not understanding how we're differentiating this northern area. I don't think we're calling it a separate stock because we don't have scientists yet to determine whether it's a separate stock or not. But we seem to be deciding we're going to sever off the state portion in determining TACs. Is that possible scientifically to do that, to even estimate a TAC at all without any assessment knowledge?
I think you're looking at it the wrong way. Is it possible to assess the size of the stock in federal waters? And that's what we're doing. We're estimating the stock and what can be harvested in federal waters, 300 to 200. And then we will manage federal waters.
Part of the TAC is going to be reached for vessels fishing in state waters as well.
We're not
assessing
that.
That's counted
that
towards
resource.
The TAC for this area, yet we're saying that's not part of the stock that we're managing.
I'm sorry, I missed part of this discussion, but this makes me think of species like herring that we manage jointly with the Mid-Atlantic and with ASMFC. And if, you know, there's a significant portion of the fishery that's in state waters, then, you know, how does it make sense to have one management measure expire and, you know, or be expended and then move to another part of essentially the same resource? It doesn't make sense. I mean, there's a reason that we have fisheries that are jointly managed with the state or with ASMFC, and I'm not necessarily suggesting that, but it's the same kind of thing, and it doesn't make sense to me if we're talking about managing the same species that's just right over the line.
Council, give it some thought. I'm going to dip into the audience. Maggie, to the motion, please. I'm practicing.
Okay. The question was asked, and I'm not. If I heard the answer, all right. I'm going to have to ask it again because I think the answer is so flabbergasting me that this a vessel that applies for what I'm going to call now the real general category limited access permit, the one who actually has some landings to back that up. He doesn't get to fish in state waters?
The intent was yes.
But that's, it says the vessels are qualified for the Northern Gulf of Maine. So that's a special, separate permit.
As well as the general category. There's two permits that are permitted to fish in there.
Okay, but you just when she asked that question, you answered it differently. So if it includes the real permitted people, the people who actually qualify, then there's, you know, my fairness issue is straightened out. I still don't understand how this is consistent with the state federal permitting consistency regulation that's going to go into final rule any day now. So this would be an exception to this federal consistency state permitting. Okay. I don't know what to say. It just doesn't make sense. It's
David.
David Frula for the Fisheries Survival Fund. Is there a legal or a practical, I don't know who to direct this question to, reason why you couldn't get through the state of Maine and the other states an assessment of the inshore resource which could be provided to the PDT to come up with an overall TAC? If these are federally permitted vessels at this point, and you have an overall TAC because you have an abundance estimate, why couldn't you work from that? I must be missing something. I want to make sure that I'm not, because that would seem to be, if the state of Maine wants to have this and the state of Maine has a survey that's underway, then it would behoove them to get that information to the PDT in a manner that it could be used constructively in 2009 when that TAC's going to get set. That's a couple of years to keep it up and running. Again, if it's practical, I think it can be surmounted. If there's some legal issue that needs to be addressed, then, you know, that may be different. I just don't know, so I'm asking.
D.
Why not? I think the problem comes into, even if we had the information for the PDT to make an overall estimate and there was data available to that was sufficient, so then what? Can the federal FMP close state waters because a TAC's been reached that's shared between state and federal waters? I think that's been the crux of this issue, why we went with having it be a federal TAC only, as I understood it.
David Frulligan, I suppose there may be a handful of some state permit holders that aren't going to have a federal permit. I suppose you could carve out a piece of the TAC for them, too, in terms of how the PDT manages it, if you get a sense of that. And, you know, if you think it's 20% of the state resource, then you account for that in your TAC setting process.
Ron?
Ron Smolitz, Fisheries Survival Fund. Question first. If I qualify for the Northern Gulf of Maine federal permit, and can I take a year off? Am I allowed, if I qualify in 2008 and then 2009, could I decide not to get the permit and then 2010 get it again? Or once I don't apply for it, I'm out?
Well, yeah, you have to apply for it every year in order to keep it.
Okay. And if if I don't qualify for the Northern Gulf of Maine permit, can I fish in state waters?
If you're not a federal permit holder, you're not subject to federal
restrictions
in state waters.
Right, so I'll be fishing on that stock.
You can fish
under the
control.
You're
not subject to the TAC or any other federal
right
requirements.
I'm trying to figure for a lobster boat in Maine, if in fact they believe that the bulk of the resource is within state waters, why would I bother to get a federal permit? So I really think, Terry, that this might not be a big problem. I think that, in fact, if I was in the Gulf of Maine, the state has no requirement for VMS. I mean, I wouldn't even get the federal permit, and I'd be pounding away in the state waters, and if I accidentally crossed the line a mile or so into federal waters, no one's tracking me anyway. I think what we need to concentrate here is in the surveys, in getting accurate assessments in the Gulf of Maine, and especially in federal waters. And I think the state it would be doing a good job in surveying out there. We do not survey in state waters in New Jersey, New York. I mean, there's no surveys there. And there's fisheries that take place in those areas are certainly very limited. I don't think it's a big problem one way or the other whether you vote this motion up. I think that getting the survey information is the most important thing. I think the fishermen will figure a way out one way or the other.
Bruce, to the motion. Thank you.
Question, is the state required to do any surveys as far as the federal is concerned? I don't believe they are they? So why do we even have an issue with anybody fishing there? I mean, they're talking about doing surveys like Terry's talking and so forth about doing surveys. Why is it even necessary? Why don't you just leave the fishermen alone? Like Ron was saying, just go let them have their licenses and not bother. If I was the state, I wouldn't want to have anything to do with this process. No.
Thanks, Bruce. Yes, sir. I can't see you. See your hand.
Gary Hatch, Owl's Head. Just some comments, I guess. First would be is if we wanted to look at the traditional catch for the federal waters, all we'd have to do is look from April 15th till December 1st for landed scallops by main boats in federal waters. But maybe a way to get by this, and somebody tell me I'm wrong, would be is if we just declared this whole area the same as Area 1 for the lobster industry, north of the 25,600, turned it over to the state, let us get a total tack for that area, and let, I guess it would be Atlantic States manage it, and then we'd have a total tack for state and federal when we'd just have that little bite to manage and see if we could make it work.
Anyone else in the audience? Back to the council. Another bite?
Can you just clarify that it wouldn't apply to the...
I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Terry said that this wouldn't... that this... the other general... the real general category scallop permit holders would still be able to fish in state waters, but that's not what the motion says. So if that's what his real intent was, could the motion be clarified to say that?
That was my intent, and I want to back up just for another little bit of clarification. I'm not advocating to turn every last lobster boat loose into this area. My intent here is thinking about the ground fish boats and some of the other general category boats that are fishing there that we're going to have a small tack right now, and it could be because of the way I'm looking at this stock assessment going that they're going to be SOL. In a short period of time while we're trying to get our science underway. It's end of the day and my brain is fizzled, but I think it's something equitable, and let's vote it up or down.
Maggie, it does need to be clarified. Does this apply to all vessels that qualify or just northern, just the ones? Because we've said two different things. So it just needs to be clarified.
The two different categories are going to be fishing in that area. So let's just take let's delete the that qualify for either the Northern Gulf of Maine or limited access general category permit.
No, that covers your concern.
All right.
They made the change while you were thinking about it.
Thank you.
Seconder okay with that? Danny, all right with that?
Yes.
Council? Okay, all those in favor, please raise your hand. 1, 2, 3. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Motion fails, 3-10. Dave,
are we ready to move this to to vote on the main motion here?
Tempting the fates, Dave.
As amended. I'm sorry.
Tempting the fates.
It's 7:02. 04.
Nothing else. Dave Gapel.
The last bullet on the white document we got this morning about the 90-day requirement for vessels to apply for a permit. We never dealt with that. I'd like to make that as a motion that NIMS consider a 90-day requirement for vessels to apply for a limited access entry permit once Amendment 11 is effective.
Dick.
I was talking. I don't think you have to make it as a motion because it's included as an addition in the main motion. The main motion includes everything on that handout with three clarifications and one addition, so it's covered.
As long as it's there, right?
Withdraw it immediately.
Okay. Anything else from the council on Amendment 11? Any further comments from the audience before I call the question? Maggie?
Okay, now that that last motion failed about fishing in the state waters, people are going to quickly figure out that this Northern Gulf of Maine permit really isn't, you know, such a good deal. And, again, the people who qualified with landings are going to be limited to 200 pounds when they fish in that area. So I just want to know if there's some way at some point to go back once all the qualification is figured out and see if that whole issue can be the issue about the guys who qualify for the general category permit to be allowed to fish their allocation in that area up to 400 pounds. Because if it turns out that nobody actually gets these permits because it doesn't benefit them, because then they wouldn't be able to fish in state waters once they have the federal permit, then all you've done is make that whole area subject to a smaller possession limit than everybody else. So I'm just trying to figure out if there's some way that that can be looked at again in the future.
If this goes forward and gets implemented, then obviously there's an area with that area that's defined will have a 200-pound trip limit. And a future action, if what you're predicting occurs, then the council certainly could modify the requirements or restrictions in that area or eliminate the program altogether, I would imagine.
So that's included in the frameworkable item.
Is that a frameworkable item, too?
All the measures in this Northern Gulf of Maine area could be changed at some point by a framework.
The trip limit?
I was kind of talking, but I always assumed any action that's been put in the plan through an amendment is assumed to be able to be changed by framework once it's part of the management plan.
Well, no, they have to be on the list.
The trip limit, Ken.
That's what
I'm not sure whether we need a specific mention in the framework of a list or not to address this specific issue.
To be precautionary, should any measure being implemented under Amendment 11 be added to the list of frameworkable items?
That would cover it. Somebody on the council want to make that motion? Moved by Dana Rice, seconded by Rodney Avila. There's a motion. To add to the list of frameworkable items anything contained in Amendment 11, is that your motion? It's frameworkable. I see hands going up. Any discussion from the council? Okay, we'll go to the audience. David?
David Frula for the Fishery Survival Fund. I think you've just been through a major allocation decision here, and to be able to revisit all your allocation decisions through frameworks every year, it seems like there's better things that can be done with your time. This one took 3 years. I can understand and appreciate and support the need to have the Northern Gulf of Maine program adjusted through framework, and I would hope you would constrain yourselves to that. Thank you.
Anyone else? Back to the council. Tom? Is it on the motion, Tom?
Is what you guys talking about just the Gulf of Maine or the general category in general?
This motion?
Yes.
This motion's basically what this motion says is that in a future action, we can go back and change anything we've done over the past 2 years.
Right. And then prior to that, you were discussing the potential for access to boats, you know, from the federal and the state waters and stuff, Gulf of Maine.
That was for the Gulf of Maine.
Right. Prior to that, you talked about some qualifying years of 00 to 04, and you talked about the 10% for the general category.
Right.
You know, I wished I knew a lot more about scallop, and now I used to know. I used to be on various New Bedford boats, winter fishing and stuff on them 100-footers, the 15-foot dredges and stuff. I had thought that it was in a relative state of abundance. Is that not the case? Scallops? Because I was kind of hoping that New Bedford would, and larger ports too, although I haven't yet identified who's in charge of these 325 limited access big boats that, because, you know, where our island is, the whole of the fleet of all of New Bedford passes by our shores. If they're going to the western, we see them on the one side. If they're going to the east, we see them on the other. And I had hoped for, I don't know, maybe I just come from that much of a different place, but a little more consideration from the larger vessels, and that it would not defy the old adage that the rising tide of scallops would lift all the boats. That somehow, perhaps a larger share of this wealth of what is a public trust and a public resource and a property of the people in Minnesota as much as the property of them in Maine or Massachusetts, that they would be a little more sympathetic to the people in smaller communities and smaller ports. Because I can only address the issue, of course, from the viewpoint of the island, which is that even the Mayhews that got here in 1642 and have had fishing vessels and gone through whaling days and been fishermen their whole lives, I don't think that they're going to qualify for too much, because by the time the limit went to 400 pounds, it didn't pay to send those boats out there for so few scallops. I mean, though we had been many years scalloping and going down the Pollock Rift and the Nantucket Shoals, I thought that we would get a greater divide or a piece of the action out of a somewhat recovered resource, you know, that they would remember us there on the island. They got a statue of an islander over there in New Bedford right in the Seaman's Bethel, a George Fred Tilton, who was the man that rescued the New Bedford fleet, what froze in up in the Arctic. He walked out 1,500 miles to get the word
to save the fleet. And he wouldn't take a New Bedford man with him. He took a couple of the Inuits. Now, 10%. I know Gregory and Jonathan are not going to be happy with that, and they'll be less happy with the 0004 days. I would think that the larger access vessels ought to have a little more a sharing attitude of them and less of an attitude that is the same as the piece of their work to wish to pick in the pocket of the little boats by working with their limited access when their days at sea are used up that they want to fish where the little guys go in between. So do I not understand this or some of it? Am I missing something?
Well, I'd like to just clarify one point you've made twice, which is that this amendment was designed and put on you by the limited access fleet. In fact, it's a product of public hearings, public meetings,
yeah,
and the council.
Yeah. Okay. They don't see any injustice in it? The other fellas, the big boats, the ones that have been, you know, getting bigger and shinier and newer, and I mean, well, if that's the case, then our only hope is this last part of her with the frame-workable business.
That's what the motion
coming
is
coming back
right
and
now.
Seeing to you guys later.
That's the motion right now. Do I take it you're in support of that?
I guess that's the last. I mean, a drowning man will grasp that straw, and that may be the only straw left. I know that Gregory does have some few landings of scallops. Like I say, it doesn't pay to go. Those boats, you know, use the 70-foot boats and 400 pounds doesn't quite do it. I know that you guys are concerned about the growth of the general category fleet and enforcement issues and stuff about it, and that some may be taken or they seem to be an intensive worry about them taking over their 400 pounds and whatnot. I mean, a lot of times I think about the no justice, no peace thing, and that sometimes they may have some bitterness in them, the fellas, at least that I've talked to, about the big boats prospering and everybody going fine and seeming to compete to see who can get the first $500,000 stock trip and everything like that, and staying out there for 2 weeks at a whack and dipping their scallops when they're done. But I just standing up's easier talking for me, but I just wanted to say thanks again, you guys, and I guess I'll have to speak in favor of that frame workable thing and see what develops from that. Thanks,
Tom.
Okay.
Okay, back to the council. Dave.
Okay. I'm a bit concerned that we, you know, that we make absolutely everything frame workable seems a overly aggressive, shall we say. I think we've done an awful lot of work here, and the idea of coming back and tinkering with major things, I think, would be a mistake. So to that point, I'm going to make a motion to amend to say except for allocation decisions and qualification criteria.
That accept should be an except. Is there a second? Seconded by Dave Preble. Pat Kirkle.
Well, I'm not sure what Dave means by allocation decisions, but qualification criteria wouldn't be frameworkable anyway. I mean, you can only add certain things to the list of frameworkable items, and the things that are core to the management program can't be frameworked, are core to the qualification decisions.
Okay, I wasn't sure what could be frameworked, but I wouldn't want to revisit the 5% allocation, the qualification. Okay, great. So my motion may not be necessary if that's the case.
So is the amendment necessary? In other words, can a framework handle allocation decisions and qualification criteria? Gene?
Yeah, I think that's basically right, but I think Dierdany's guidance is what not to put in, and so I think this is helpful, this kind of amendment for identifying the core things. So, because you wouldn't want to put it in and then later say it's not.
Paul?
Gene, do you have what's frameworkable now in Amendment 10 or whatever is existing now doesn't go away? And I think trip limits. The issue why we're here...
Like
a trip limit from 200 pounds to go to what's we can do that by framework already. So
right.
I don't know why we're having a general. I think everything we want to do by framework is already listed in an Amendment 10.
Rip.
I'm just sort of wondering out loud whether we were doing this primarily for some issues to do with the Northern Gulf of Maine. So I'm wondering if we're more specific on items that can be frameworked concerning the Northern Gulf of Maine measures.
Rodney.
Yeah, if Paul's correct and trip limits are frameworkable already, we can withdraw this motion. We don't even need it. Just...
I think actually Deirdre's point after Maggie made her comment was that we are adding some new things in Amendment 11, and it's a good idea to revisit the front list of frameworkable items to make sure that in the future we can adjust those things. So I think it's a valid point. We want to just make sure that we build in the flexibility we need in the future to framework some of the newer things that have been added with this amendment.
Right.
Yeah, one other thing. Just by having the list, that doesn't mean we have to go back and change everything. That has to come before the committees and the councils. Okay, just wanted to make sure.
I hate to do it, but I'm going to take 5 minutes to straighten this one out. Okay. After reviewing page 53 in the DSEIS and talking about the process as to how scallop management works in terms of a biennial framework adjustment and reviewing the current list of frameworkable items, it's my recommendation that we get rid of the motion to amend and the original motion, because I believe that we can accomplish everything that people want to accomplish in the framework already based on what's listed in the frameworkable items, trip limits, and other adjustments. So that would be my recommendation. Rip?
Would a motion to table both of them till time uncertain?
I'll accept that.
So moved.
Seconded by Jim Salisbury. Undebatable. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Thirteen opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries. 13-0. One abstention. Now we're back on the Uber motion. Paul, you have something to add?
Just on the main motion, what we normally do is add the words for submission, because this is a submission. So approve the list of preferred alternatives from SCOUT Committee as final recommendations for Amendment 11 for submission to the National Fishery, to NIMS.
Okay. Anything further from the council members? Okay. And I'm going to, Jim.
Yeah, I think that's in there.
Jim Salisbury. Nothing further from the council. Okay, I believe we should do a roll call vote for submission of documents, so I'm going to ask for a roll call vote.
Please read the motion and answer yes, no, or abstain. Rodney Avila.
Yes.
Rip Cunningham.
Yes.
David Pierce is absent. David Gaethel.
Yes.
Tom Hill.
Yes.
Mike Leary.
Yes.
Sally McGee.
Yes.
Pat Kirkle.
Abstain.
Terry Stockwell.
Yes.
Claire McBain.
Yes.
Jimmy Odlin.
Yes.
Dave Preppel.
Yes.
Dana Rice.
Yes.
Phil Rule. Oh, sorry, Phil. Jim Salisbury.
Yes.
David Simpson.
Yes.
And April. Motion carries.
Okay. Dave and Deirdre, okay. I believe we still have
Framework 20. And give the motion for Framework 20. I mean, simple enough to identify alternative 3.2, the extension of interim measures for preventing overfishing for fishing year 2007 through February 29th, 2008, as the final action for Framework 20 to the SCALP FMP.
That was a committee motion?
Yes.
Does not require a second. Any discussion or comment from the council?
We're
on Framework 20. Anyone in the audience on Framework 20? Back to the council. We'll call the question, actually. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Fifteen opposed. Abstentions. Motion carries 15-0, one abstention. Anything else, Dave?
Yeah, under other business, we have one more motion. Which relates to developing an action that will address the 24-hour period issue that was brought forward from the Law Enforcement Committee to be done in the most expeditious way possible, either through a regulatory amendment or Framework 20. The document would consider allowing one landing per calendar day consistent with how current regulations are worded for limited access vessels fishing outside a day at sea, with the understanding that a vessel could leave for a second trip in the same calendar day but not land until the next calendar day.
Deirdre.
Something to clarify in the motion. We've learned since the committee made this motion, I have talked to the regional office about this, and the idea was that we would, after the committee meeting, determine what would actually be the most expeditious way to address this. We weren't sure at the time of the committee meeting. Since then, through discussions, the SCALAB action that's going to go in effect first of all the ones we're working on is Framework 20. Don't want to mess this up. Framework 20. So the idea right here, it's not specific, but the idea would be that we would add this request to change the regulations in Framework 20. So when we submit Framework 20, we would add this regulatory change request to that action when we submit it. But that is the most expeditious way to address this. And in talking with the agency, we do not believe that it would affect the categorical exclusion that Framework 20 is under and shouldn't affect it.
That was a committee motion. Any discussion from the council? Questions? Anyone in the audience to the motion on the board? Back to the council. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Oops. Sorry, Rodney.
Deidre, wasn't we supposed to add on to this Mr. Stavish's letter about the VMS, the power down? Wasn't it supposed to go on to 20?
Silly Rodney. That's Framework 19.
Oh.
yes.
<Pretty. laughs>
Oh, my God.
Thank you, Rodney. There were two additional measures that were added to Framework 19 because we have nothing to do this summer, including Mr. Starvish's request.
Mm-hmm. Rodney, anything else? Okay. That felt good. Okay. All those in favor, please raise your hand. Opposed? 15. Abstentions? Motion carries. 14 in favor. Anything else, Dave?
I believe that does it. Unless Deidre... Okay, I think we got it all. I just want to take this chance to really thank Deidre for all the work that she's done and Demet. Yeah, it's just a tremendous amount of work, I realize, and all in a very short, compressed time frame, and I really appreciate all the help she's given us.
And to Matt Haxever, definitely half of this document she has to take credit for adding all those tables in.
I appreciate all the work you've all put into it and all the extra effort that you've all put into it, and congratulate the council on making some tough decisions. Pat, did you have anything else? Nope. Okay. Tomorrow morning, I think it's 8 o'clock. 8 a.m. tomorrow, research steering, followed by a public comment period at 8:50.